Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the MIA podcast where we explore this question of will Australian manufacturing return to the glory days of the 70s? And here to help us answer this question is Max Denning. How are you?
Good, John. Really happy to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So, Max, as with all our guests, absolute pleasure to have you on board. If you could just give a quick background of your company and what you do and sort of how they got in business as well.
Yeah, sure. So, look, I'm the executive general manager of a company called Smart Commercial Solar. So we're one of the largest commercial and industrial solar business in Australia. That's still 100% privately owned. All of our competitors in the space have all been bought by either private equity or electricity retailers. But simply put, we're an engineering, procurement, construction, operation and maintenance business, and we specialise in delivering large-scale solar systems behind the meter for our clients. So we see solar as the first step in our journey with clients, and we also look for other ways to reduce our clients' electricity consumption through things like battery storage, biodiesel generators, and even waste-to-energy generators we're getting into at the moment. And essentially, our goal is to try and help our clients achieve 100% renewable energy. So some of the clients that that we do work with, some brand names that you might be aware of, McCain Foods is a big client of ours. Carlton and United Breweries or Asahi Beverages, big client of ours. Other people in the food space like Pro10 Chicken. But a lot of our business is centered around supporting manufacturing or production type businesses. We also work in the retail space. But essentially anyone who has a large energy consumption, that's who we're looking to assist. And that's where we're going to have the greatest impact.
Yeah, perfect. So look, if you are listening, today is very much an energy conversation. And I think we both agree, Max, that, you know, in the last, definitely in the last 12 months, we've seen a rising increase in energy, probably the last 24, but it's probably only catching up to people in the last 12 months as their contracts renew. You know, I think that's it's a big concern for people in manufacturing. So let's first just have a quick discussion around how you are involved in manufacturing. You've mentioned a couple of food manufacturers, and let's eventually explore this conversation of where energy is, what the impact is for manufacturers, and I think what the future would be as well.
Yeah, as you mentioned, energy is obviously a huge topic at the moment, especially in manufacturing. It's one of the largest overhead costs for a business. I think it's in the top three for most businesses. So making sure that you can get that under control is obviously a huge focus for a lot of businesses. But look, essentially for us, we assist a large number of manufacturing business in looking for ways to reduce their energy consumption and their reliance on fluctuating grid prices. A lot of businesses these days have targets around reducing carbon emissions, and that's just not from a green perspective. It's also a commercial outcome as well, because a lot of these businesses are being asked what they are doing to reduce their reliance on fossil fuels. And businesses are starting to lose customers if they're not kind of going down this path. So we're trying to assist by reducing consumption, reducing carbon emissions, and then the reality of that is we are looking to ensure their long-term competitiveness in the space as well. So yeah, the types of manufacturing businesses we work with are in the food and beverage space, a lot of them. Plastics, paper, glass, aluminium, pharmaceuticals, furniture, and others as well. So, so we are looking for, we work with clients, and typically manufacturing clients are operating 6 to 7 days a week. And their low profiles typically match a solar generation curve really well. So solar works pretty perfectly to offset clients' electricity spend. Some of the customers we do work with, already mentioned, but Impact International is probably a good one to mention. They're a plastic tube manufacturer based in Smithfield in Western Sydney. We've installed a couple of systems on their sites. And they typically, the businesses they work with, a lot of them are in the cosmetic space. So they're filling tubes for makeup brands and, sunscreens and those types of things. And their customers had been coming to them, asking them what they'd been doing in this space. So we've installed two systems on their sites to reduce around 40% of their energy consumption just with solar. And they're a customer that we'll come back with, we'll come back to at some point in time to talk to them about storage, about biodiesel generators, and potentially other smart energy plays so that we can further reduce their the impact and reduce their reliance on traditional grid electricity, which is fluctuating. Because the thing that a business can do itself is by generating as much of their energy consumption on their site behind the meter as possible, they're reducing the fluctuation of the remainder of their consumption. So typically we're at about 30 to 40% for solar, which leaves, 60 to 70% that's fluctuating on the grid, which is starting to be a more a number that businesses can focus on to reduce further.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to, I'll come back to that point in a minute, but I wanted to focus a little bit on that push for green, that sustainability layer in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it seemed to have initiated from a big social push, but there's also the government layers that are laid in that as well. So the clients you're working in, their clients, what would you say their push is from their end? Is it for them to be socially responsible to their B2C, or is it government or mix of both? What would you see it as?
Well, I think a lot of it's actually commercially focused, for the exact reason around what energy prices are doing around the world at the moment. We've seen in Australia that the adoption of renewables have actually reduced energy prices on the market, and it's a big subject at the moment around, well, what is causing volatility on the market, and it's an argument that we get into a lot depending on what side of the fence that you sit in. For us, we're fairly holistic in what we think a future energy market should look like, and it should be balanced. It shouldn't be one way or the other. But what we've seen, and especially since 2017, when the Hazelwood power station closed, when that happened, we saw energy prices skyrocket on the wholesale market. And since then, since all of that hecticness kind of dealt with itself, the adoption of renewables in new generation coming onto the market has reduced energy prices on the market to a point about 18 months ago. We're at the cheapest energy prices on the wholesale market that we've been in about 10 years. And prices were looking like coming down further. We were seeing clients' energy contract prices cheaper than we've ever seen them. Now, what's caused the current fluctuations is announcements of more coal-fired power stations being closed. And what that does is with the reduction in capacity on the national electricity market, there's nervousness that there's not going to be enough generation there to replace that when it does come offline. So that's what's been causing a lot of the volatility on the market, and that's what we've been seeing over the last 12 months in terms of increases in energy prices. Now, so I think a lot of what customers and other stakeholders have been asking their their suppliers to be, why they've been asking them to move into the renewable space and do something in there is because they are thinking about, well, if you don't do this and your overheads increase, then the price of your product is also going to increase. So we're probably not going to buy from you if your energy prices go up and you put your product prices up. And then with other stakeholders like shareholders in some of these businesses, they're thinking the same thing. They're thinking about the long-term viability of the business. And you've also seen that in the finance space where a lot of the banks have decided to not fund any more of these fossil fuel projects because they don't believe in the long-term viability of those projects. So I think as much as it is obviously a sustainability piece as well, and there's some importance in that. But a lot of these customers and other stakeholders are thinking about long-term viability.
Mm. Okay, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that one. So just with some of the rollouts that you are getting to the market as well, there's probably, I know in the early days of solar, there was a general perception that there was a fair bit of upfront cost to get solar / renewables up and running on premises. How do you, you've got obviously PPAs and all that rolling out these days. How, in layman's terms, how does that work for a manufacturer?
Yeah, PPAs or power purchase agreements are probably the most popular choice of procurement method these days. And it's simply because a power purchase agreement in its simplest form is a contract to buy energy generated by the solar system that's installed on the site. So rather than a business spending their own core capital on a solar system, which typically has a 4 to 6 year break even, where a lot of businesses can probably use that core capital in their core business much more efficiently than a 4 to 6 year break even. You know, they're probably looking at 18 month break evens on a lot of their core business activities. So a business can choose to adopt a solar system via a PPA, which is where we'll come and install the system for free. We fund the build of that system through a number of different investment groups that we use. We build the system, we maintain the system, and simply at the end of each month, like a manufacturing business currently sees their electricity bill, they'll also see a electricity bill from us for the PPA. But the benefit of the PPA is the PPA is going to be between 30 to 50% cheaper than their grid electricity cost. And that's fixed for the term of the PPA as well. So it's not as if the next year we're going to look at it and it's going to go up by 50% or 60%. It stays consistent for the term. So terms for PPAs can be as short as 3 or 5 years. Obviously, the shorter the term, the higher the PPA price will be. But they can be out, and we've signed PPAs as long as 30 years. And large corporate manufacturers have looked at 30-year PPAs because they're trying to get the cheapest cost of electricity as possible. And they also trust in the technology. The technology has a long asset life as well. And if we're maintaining the system year on year, the system should continue to perform over the long term. So PPAs are great. We do a lot of PPAs. They take away that capital hurdle, as you mentioned. Although solar is much more cost effective these days, definitely, and I would imagine a lot of manufacturers, if not all of them, have looked at solar at some point. And they've probably looked at it and gone, oh, it doesn't quite stack up for us, or maybe the capital was too high. I'd challenge them to have a look at it these days because we haven't or we're yet to find a situation where we can't make a solution work for a manufacturer. So it's definitely something they should all be doing.
Imagine energy being essentially a fixed, predictable cost on your balance sheet.
Yeah, something that can be budgeted. Yeah, exactly. Well, a lot of our customers think, well, where's the catch? No, it's just simply as long as the sun keeps coming up every day, which it has for the last couple billion years or so. The returns for solar are fairly well known, as long as the system is looked after, of which we do. And we're obviously motivated to make sure the system's performing at optimal levels, because that's how we're getting our returns as well. So, it's a great way to go forward.
Win-win. And I guess we're about to enter, I think it's El Nino, whichever one, the drought period. So there's likely to be more sun around. So there you go.
Yeah.
So one of the challenges for Australian manufacturing, I would say since the 70s, has been our competitiveness against world markets in terms of cost of production. How do you see the energy cost fitting into that advantage? So just to, I think just to recap, like a lot of the conversations we've having with manufacturers is the fact that we are more expensive with some items is, it's just the way it is, because we have a generally a higher quality and people are paid to pay more for that. But I think the angle I'd like to look at is that if energy costs are reducing, does that make something that was traditionally maybe not as competitive become more competitive in the world market?
Yeah, and I think that's what we touched on a little bit earlier around long-term competitiveness, and obviously energy pricing being a massive overhead for a lot of these businesses. It's obviously been tough to compete with the Chinese manufacturers due to their sheer volume and scale. But I think, as you mentioned, like more and more Australians, they do want to support local businesses as well. So I think if energy prices stabilize and we're able to do a lot more with companies by installing generating assets behind the meter on their sites, to combat a lot of that volatility, I think manufacturing competitiveness can start to return. That paired with people wanting a different option to an overseas option these days, and you know, politically, maybe we don't want to be tying ourselves to certain regions as much as we probably have traditionally. I think manufacturing in Australia can have a strong future if we continue going down this path and looking for ways to reduce energy costs.
Yeah, especially as we're seeing a bit of a surge in generation four of manufacturing, where there is more of a reliance on automation and the technological layer, that implies that it's going to require more energy to run. And you know, I think as a byproduct, if energy is more competitive, then the cost of rolling out such technology should be, you know, the cost of running that such technology should be reduced as well.
Correct.
Okay. Where do you see smart commercial solar, your involvement in manufacturing shifting in the future of your business, where you can help more or provide more?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we'll continue to assist manufacturing businesses in the solar space for the near future. That's a no-brainer exercise for most businesses. We see it as the first step in our relationship with a client. As mentioned, we can typically offset around 20 to 40% of a business's electricity load with solar alone. And our goal in business is to get to 100%. So how we do that is, yeah, looking at those other generating assets or storage assets like battery storage, like biodiesel generators, like waste to energy generators, where we're trying to create a little bit of a circular economy at customers' sites. The other thing that is still new in the space is hydrogen as well. Mm. I just spent a week in Japan with Panasonic, and Panasonic have a hydrogen fuel cell manufacturing plant in Kyoto, and their site, they're part of the RE100 initiative, meaning that they're They're looking to offset 100% of their electricity consumption with renewables by a certain date. Most of the people that are in, or the businesses that are in this RE100, it's either by 2025 or 2030. And the reason we went to that site was because they have a working model, essentially, of that manufacturing site running on solar, battery, and hydrogen. So 100% of their needs at that site are being looked after by that system. Not going to say the hydrogen is the most financially sensible solution right now. There's still a ways to go on that, but it was cool to see the integration of those technologies and how that can work at a heavy manufacturing site that they have there. So that's going to be another piece of the puzzle as well. When we're considering, a lot of the time, obviously solar generates majority of its power in the middle of the day. Now, a lot of our customers don't necessarily match that load profile. They might have an early morning and late afternoon bias load profile. What do we do with excess solar that's produced during the daytime? And that's, I'm talking not just at a customer side, I'm talking generally on the market. There's probably something to be said about, you know, putting that excess solar into batteries, which is one way you can do that. But batteries like to be cycled every day. So you want to charge and discharge that battery every day. And then the secondary piece to that would be potentially using that excess solar to put through an electrolyzer to create hydrogen. Which can be stored for a period of time as well. So that's I think our involvement will be continuing to find new ways to continue offsetting more of a customer's energy consumption, starting at 30 to 40% and trying to get up to 100%. There's also other things that we can do around optimizing how a customer uses their energy as well. Turning loads on and off at certain times. There are opportunities on the energy market where if a customer can turn their load off or charge or discharge a battery at certain times, they're able to earn revenues on the wholesale market. And that might be if they've got a battery, charging when power is cheap and discharging when power is expensive and earning a revenue there. Utilizing other opportunities like FCAS, which is the frequency market, prices on the energy market can go as high as $14,000 a megawatt hour. Now, there's opportunities if a customer has a battery, they could be selling energy into the market at $14,000 a megawatt hour, and revenues start to grow pretty quickly off the back of that. So we're already looking at a number of solutions in that space at the moment, but I think that's going to be more commonplace couple of years.
Yeah. So just that conversation around hydrogen, how soon would you see that as being like a viable option to roll out in Australia?
Yeah, it's a hard one to say. Based on what I can see now and also looking at the comparison with battery storage as well around how prices have moved with battery storage, I'd probably say we're still five or so years away from having something that's semi-commercially viable. The problem is that the way to produce hydrogen, putting it through an electrolyzer and then through a fuel cell to produce electricity, there's a lot of steps involved there. So the efficiency is not that great. However, my perspective is that using essentially wasted energy from excess renewables should be used for something, and I feel like creating hydrogen is a great step, rather than what we're seeing on the energy market a lot at the moment is where we have a lot of excess solar or potential for excess solar. The networks are curtailing that generation down to the load profile on a customer's site, because obviously we can't have more generation out on the market than we do have demand. So essentially that's being wasted at the moment, and I feel it should be used to generate another form of electricity somewhere.
Yeah, perfect. Just on that note, your business would work with manufacturers to help I guess look at where they are, where their profile is right now, and the best strategy to roll out for their business. And like you mentioned before, to actually earn money, additional revenue from that as well.
We roadmap all of this out for clients, as I said, solar being that first step, storage being the second step, other generation sources being the third step. And then if we can't do anything more on site, then there's probably potential to purchase the rest of their electricity from a renewable energy asset like a solar farm or a wind farm or something like that at a low cost. So they're the kind of steps that we've got. And we do step that out very clearly with clients from the beginning. And solar just being that no-brainer is the easy one to tick over first.
Yep. So if you are listening and this is all a bit, I guess, a bit new, or it's, you're not an expert in it, by all means, reach out to Smart Commercial Solar and book in a consult of some sort as well. So the conversation around your business exporting overseas, you mentioned Japan. What are other traditionally strong manufacturing countries doing about their energy, and where do you see Smart Commercial Solar tapping into that as well?
We're doing a little bit of business at the moment in looking in Southeast Asia, in the Pacific Islands at the moment for other reasons, and New Zealand is an emerging market in the renewable space as well. But obviously you see a lot of the European countries, they were the early adopters of renewable energy. Germany, Spain.
They've got whole towns that are completely self-reliant.
Correct. So we've been able to see around the world of what a large mix of renewable energy can do to support manufacturing. And I think that we can take that as a model here. In Australia, we have a very high penetration of residential solar, and it's starting to move into the commercial space at the moment, but we still have a lot more that we can do. So we haven't really scratched the surface on that yet. Whereas over in Europe, they have a lot more utility scale than we do here. So the big solar farms, big wind farms, and they're obviously doing a great job in reducing energy prices over there to support that manufacturing industry. So we're looking at those other markets for the pure reason that energy prices, especially in the Pacific Islands, are quite high, and we're looking at remote towns there that run on diesel generators at a cost that's about three or four times the cost of what energy is in Australia. So it's a no-brainer, obviously, to be looking at solar and other solutions. So solar and batteries over there already make sense at those energy prices. New Zealand energy prices have increased recently. Typically in that market, their energy prices have been quite cheap, and they're quite renewables heavy over there already because they have a big hydro generation capacity over there. And so what that means is, that there's also no incentives for renewables over there, which is kind of great, because we're seeing that market needing support in terms of more renewables to go into the space, even with no incentives, and it still stacks up on its own, which is great, because what incentives have done in Australia over the years, if they've caused a little bit of a boom and bust cycle, and especially over the 14 years that I've been in solar, I've seen a number of rebate changes over the years, and what that does is it really causes these peaks and troughs in the space. Things have tended to settle over the last few years because we haven't had any changes in the current way we do things, which is great, because we've got a market that we understand what the size of the market is. We can actually plan for it, and there's no outside influences at the moment, and there's very little incentive still available at the moment. So it is a pure market. It's our competitor is essentially the electricity market. if we can deliver power cheaper than the energy market can deliver, we've got a customer. We've got a solution that we can help with. So it's the same thing in other markets where energy prices are higher than what we can deliver for. We've got an opportunity, and that's where we're looking overseas.
Yep, excellent. And just on that point before about New Zealand, I mean, they've traditionally been a relatively strong manufacturer. They've sort of been in and out of manufacturing, but have you seen that lower, more competitive energy costs help them in any way? Or
well, we're seeing a lot of our Australian customers are setting up operations over there as well. So, I mean, that wouldn't be a decision that's just made, oh, you know, we just want to go and set up in New Zealand. I think a lot of that comes down to what are the market forces around that? Can we be competitive by setting up in New Zealand? What does the opportunity look like? And so with that, I believe lower energy prices are a consideration for where businesses are setting up, definitely. And so, it shows that there's obviously an opportunity in Australia still if we can get that energy price under control.
Yeah. So you wouldn't be setting up in South Africa or Lebanon or something like that?
No, definitely not. Definitely not South Africa.
Yeah. I mean, are they looking into these options, or they just got other priorities at the moment?
With South Africa you're talking about? Or
yeah.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Obviously, they're going through a period at the moment that's pretty sad in terms of what they're having to deal with. You know, rolling blackouts kind of on a daily basis for the last period of time. It's very tough. I mean, that impacts life, not just business. That impacts life. So there is obviously an opportunity to try and find solutions for that, but I think there's probably other political issues that are probably holding up a lot of those things as well. So we have thought about what we could do to support that country as well and provide solutions, but like I said, I think there's probably other things at play that are probably stopping the pace at which something could be done.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, not an easy jump in and set up business solution.
So, no.
Very complex market.
Yeah.
Look, what would you say is your advice to businesses in manufacturing right now?
Yeah, look, I think I mentioned it before. I dare say that majority of manufacturers have looked at solar at some point in the past. They would have looked at it if they haven't done anything at the moment. They would have thought back then that it doesn't make sense. It doesn't stack up. The capital spend is too high. The return on investment is too long, and they couldn't see the benefit fast enough. So, I think the advice I would give them is to relook at it now. Solar is the cheapest it's ever been. There are far smart financing solutions. Like PPAs that businesses can look at where they don't need to spend their core business capital. They can gain a cheaper electricity price simply by adopting solar under a PPA with no capex, everything looked after. So my advice would be to start their journey there. What is going to ensure their long-term competitiveness is if they can reduce their reliance on grid electricity as much as possible. And step one is with solar. From there, we can start doing some really cool things around battery storage and other generation sources. And if businesses do it under a PPA, it's very easy as technology and as these other applications become more financially sensible, it's easy to tack those onto a PPA as well. So my advice would be just to jump back in and have a look, and it definitely wouldn't hurt to see what it looks like for their business now.
Yeah, perfect. And look, obviously there are a few players in the Australian market, but let's focus on yours today. So for those who do want to reach out to Smart Commercial Solar, what's the best way to get in contact, or what's your website and how to get in contact with you?
Yeah, the website simply smartcommercialsolar.com.au. You can send an inquiry through to contact@smartcommercialsolar.com.au. And if you do that after listening to this podcast, just mention my name, and I'd be happy to have a conversation with you and talk you through what your options are.
Perfect. And look, I love this conversation because it feeds into so many layers of manufacturing. You know, there's there's the cost of manufacturing. There's the essentially the green tick. So, you know, locally and internationally, we're covering a few more areas as well. There's the environmental layer as well, where, you know, we're looking at the future of manufacturing as it progresses into Gen 4, maybe a Gen 5 as well. So I think a very, very exciting topic. So Max, thank you very, very much for coming on board today. Do you have any final advice, or you feel that you've covered it?
Yeah, I think that I've covered it. Look, I think there's definitely a future there in manufacturing in Australia. We can get things under control through measures like this. And obviously, yeah, reach out. If you've got any other questions, happy to answer them. Get in touch and we can have a chat.
Sounds good. Once again, thank you very much, Max. So for those who are listening, not watching, we'll have the link in the show notes as well, but as a reminder, so Max from Smart Commercial Solar, thank you again for coming on board, and thank you again to our listeners, the MIA podcast. We'll see you in another episode. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
We'll be right back.